5 o'clock hour, Stillman and Company, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Chase McCabe, Mark Howard in for Jared Stillman today. He skipped today's start, hopes to be back in the rotation tomorrow. Hope you're feeling better, Jared. I know it's been a rough one for you, but we're holding it down here today. Just seeing the news that Pep Hamilton appears to be going to the Texans as their quarterback's coach as David Culley starts to assemble his staff after being named the head coach of the Houston Texans. And that led me into something, because you used the phrase bridge coach, and nobody wants to be that, or the bridge quarterback, as you put it. And I've heard all these things of people saying that, you know, watching First Take and in all these shows of saying, well, he's 65, and, you know, that is that really, you know, the coach you want to build, you know, the foundation of your franchise for the next few years? And I just, when I hear this stuff about how old a coach is, I mean, age is but a number to me. If you know football and have been a successful coach in your career, I don't care how old you are. I really don't. It has never bothered me. And they identified David Culley as someone that can come in and run that franchise. Now, I don't know that much about him like you do. You obviously have a relationship with him, Mark, but if he can do the job, then do the job. You know, Vic Fangio didn't get his first shot at being a head coach until he was in his 60s. And, you know, the jury's still out on if he can be the guy. He's got to find the franchise quarterback and players. But Vic Fangio had, you know, a great reputation as a coach throughout the league. So I don't really know why that always has to become a narrative.
No, I agree with you. David's 65, and he's not gumming his corn. You know, he's in great shape. He takes good care of himself. You know, look at Greg Popovich. Greg Popovich is 72 years old and still on top of his game. So I never buy that garbage, you know, about, you know, getting into your 60s or 70s or whatever. And, you know, it's all in how you take care of yourself. Don't be like me, is what I'm telling the boys and girls out there. But in all seriousness, yeah, I hate to hear David walking in the front door with them already talking about Josh McCown, you know, who I'm sure in his own right might be a candidate to be a head coach. But Josh McCown, to my knowledge, has not coached a day in his life. I mean, he knows the game. He's impressed a lot of people. But, you know, David Culley has paid his dues. 27 years in the league and a long time before that. You know, going back to 1978 in the college game at Austin Peay, and just gradually worked his way up into major college football, and then went to the NCAA, or rather the NFL, and he stayed there. And so I don't want David to suddenly, you know, get this watered down, introduction that, you know, he's sort of the coach in waiting, because you hate being that person. And that would really suck.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, has Josh McCown even officially retired? Like, I mean, I know he was on a practice squad last year and was basically the stowaway quarterback last season because of COVID-19. I mean, I know he's got a good football mind, and I've heard this, you know, talk before that he could be, you know, a coach in this league. But come on, you know, maybe it works in the NBA where a guy retires and immediately goes into coaching and, you know, becomes a head coach in a short amount of time. I don't see it in the NFL. I think you need some time to develop. And we've seen some former quarterbacks especially become coordinators pretty fast and all of that. But I agree. I think
the last time, I can tell you this pretty much without fear of contradiction, and that is the last time, and to my knowledge, the only time, maybe in the last 75 or 80 years, that a player has gone from being, you know, from being a player to a coach is Norm Van Brocklin. He led the Eagles to the 1960 NFL championship, the last championship Philly had won before the Super Bowl a few years ago. And then he became the head coach of the expansion Minnesota Vikings, where Fran Tarkenton drove him crazy. But Van Brocklin was a head coach for 10 or 12 years without a lot of success. So I don't know if you can go by that.
Yeah, I mean, and you just said it, of how long ago it was that that actually happened. I mean, we've seen in all sports, we've kind of seen this weird trend with coach with former players, whether they go to the booth for a year and then they go to the sideline, or, you know, just however it works, if it works, that's the big thing. But the point in this conversation is, you know, there shouldn't be a whole, hey, we're going to give you a chance to be a head coach. You're only going to be there for a couple of years. We got this guy. We need you to groom. If you could just take care of that for us, that'd be great. Like that, if that's not right, if that's what's happening, and I don't believe that that's actually what is happening. But then also this this whole narrative of they're too old. Nick Saban, 69, and just won another national championship. So I think that he's doing just fine. Now the thing,
yeah, Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski are,
yeah,
are, you know, even though their teams aren't ranked this year, are still in pretty good shape.
Yeah. So it's age is but a number, is how I have always put it. Now the big thing for the Texans is going to be what's going to happen with the quarterback. Is he going to be your quarterback? And if he's not, who's the next quarterback going to be? How do we think that the Deshaun Watson domino effect is going to affect the Indianapolis Colts as they try and find their next quarterback? Matthew Stafford's name has been thrown out there as being a possible signing for them now that his time in Detroit is over. But does this change any of the other movement around the league in your mind?
Well, I think that a lot of times one move does affect another. But I think that Deshaun Watson's situation and Matthew Stafford's could be sort of independent, not only of each other, but of other moves. I think Indianapolis is so logical for Stafford because it's everything he wants. He'd be stepping in with a really good team. I don't think he wants to go through what he did with the Lions for his whole career. So the Colts make an incredible amount of sense. Now, could somebody get hurt or retire or whatever? It's possible. I mean, you've got to understand how crazy this offseason is about to become. Because not only do you have the possibility again of not having mini camps and OTAs because of COVID-19, that's still a possibility, but you also have a reduced salary cap. And already Ben Roethlisberger has said, I don't care what I make next year. You know, I'll take whatever I have to fit under the cap, because the Steelers basically told him, we can't afford you. Yeah. And after seeing the way that he played the second half of the season, that's understandable. So all of a sudden, Ben Roethlisberger is being extremely flexible, because he knows that if he decides to walk, maybe they make a run at Watson. Maybe they make a run at Matt Stafford. Either guy would put the Steelers, you know, into a position again of being a Super Bowl contender. So, you know, Roethlisberger, I'm sure, you know, understands the landscape and, you know, is not going to do anything crazy.
Yeah, $41.2 million the cap hit on Roethlisberger. I was just watching that on ESPN while you were talking, that he's, you know, very open to working something out with them after the team president said, yeah, there's going to have to be some concessions, cap concessions, not talking about popcorn, in order to keep Ben Roethlisberger. So and that's going to be a huge part of the whole equation when it comes to this offseason. So going back to Stafford for a second, taking the whole Titans thing aside, just looking at football players and coaches, I love Frank Reich as a coach. I think he's one of the brightest coaches in the NFL. I think that is what he has been able to do since he's been in Indianapolis with the quarterback position of Luck retiring and then Jacoby Brissett and then a year with Rivers is remarkable. I'd like to see him, even though it's not good for the Titans, but, you know, see what he does working with the same guy for a few years. And I feel like that Matt Stafford and Frank Reich would be an instant connection. And then that would be bad news for the Titans, because the Colts would be really, really good.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that offensive line healthy, and even though Costanzo has retired, not George Costanza, but Anthony Costanzo. That's still an elite. What?
I said my worlds are colliding, Jerry.
Exactly. But I think that's still an elite offensive line, and I think Stafford would crawl on broken glass to Indianapolis, to play for the Colts. I just do, and I'll tell you what, he's put his time in. He carried that franchise as well as he could, and they just never had the horses. You know, they made the playoffs a couple of times, but he's still got some tread left on the tires. He's still got 2 or 3 years left. So I'm like you are. I mean, you know, it's not going to hurt me to see him go to Indianapolis and maybe do well. I mean, I'd love to see a guy like that go to the Super Bowl after all those years.
Yeah, because I'll say this too, even, you know, as somebody that covers the Titans and has been a, you know, fan of the Titans and grown up here, I want to see the division be exciting. I don't like it when the AFC South is the laughing stock of the league. I mean, let's have some competition. I think going to those games, you know, in normal times when Nissan Stadium is packed and you have Titans fans over here and, you know, Colts or Jags or whatever over there, Texans. I mean, I think it's good for the division to have that type of competition. So, you know, bring it on. That's how I always look at it.
Oh, I agree with you. I mean, how much fun is it going to be to see Urban Meyer on the sidelines at Nissan Yes. Stadium? How much fun is it going to be to talk about a couple of times a year and, you know, even beyond that as they become more relevant? Of course. Of course. I agree with you.
Yeah, I think because I'm sure, you know, the Washington football team, they won it by default because that's how bad the NFC East was. Like, come on, who cares? And I couldn't support that. So I want to see the division get better. Speaking of getting better, that's what the Tennessee Volunteers are going to try and do under Josh Heupel. We will head up to Knoxville and talk to Wes Rucker about the latest there on Rocky Top. When we come back, Stillman and Company. Jared out today, Mark Howard, Chase McCabe in for him, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stillman and Company, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app, delivered by TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with 5-star service. Chase McCabe, Mark Howard in for Jared Stillman today, and we say hello to Wes Rucker, Go Vols 24/7. He's had nothing to talk about the last few days up there in Tennessee. Wes, how you doing?
Doing all right, guys. I got a puppy going nuts over here, but I think I've got him. I think I've shut the door and gotten him away. So we're good. We're good.
I think all of us working from home have that going on these days. But totally fine. Totally cool. I read a tweet that you put out earlier, a couple hours ago, that you went back and you rewatched Heupel's press conference, and you said you thought it was fine in the moment, but you liked it better on the second viewing. What was it that stood out to you the second time around?
Well, I think, to be honest, you know, the first time you could tell, you know, these searches, and God knows I've covered enough of them by now, you know, you know how kind of tiring they are, and that's just for us covering it. You know, for the people going through it, I mean, I can't imagine, you know, and this guy had he just had to fly 650 miles after being up a couple of sleepless nights trying to figure out if he was going to take this job for sure or not. And then he gets to Tennessee, you know, immediately gets off a plane, does a press conference. So we're sitting there saying, did he just say Knowles instead of Vols? Did he just say Plumen instead of Plowman? And you know, he did both those things like in the first minute. So I was thinking, oh no, this is not going to be a good press conference. But after I watched it a second time, I was like, you know, I think that came off better. Now that doesn't mean he's going to be a good or bad football coach. I just meant that, you know, I think it went better the second time I watched it.
I think everyone that looks at his body of work, not only at UCF, but as a coordinator, you know, whether it's at Missouri or beyond, they know this offense in time, once they get the right players, is going to be better and it's going to be more exciting to watch. That's a good thing. I like that. That's what a lot of the fans want to see. But what about the defensive side of the ball? As he puts his staff together, how important of a hire is a DC going to be for him to make sure that they're stopping the other team?
Oh, it's really important, you know, because, you know, and we've even seen this with Alabama, you know, as well as Alabama does just about everything. You know, when Alabama went to that up-tempo and they kind of spread the field and went fast, you know, you saw some of those numbers go down, and you're thinking, man, what's going on with the Bama defense? Well, I mean, you know, that's what happens when you're playing a lot more plays in a game. So football now, I mean, it's like it's no longer a game of the points or the yards you allow. It's the amount of stops you get in the game. And if you can just create some negative plays, you know, and get some drives off schedule and get some punts here and there, that's almost like a win, you know. And I'm not saying that for most teams, because when you played offense as badly as Tennessee's played at times the past couple years, I mean, every drive was crucial. I mean, you had to give up a few points. But in, you know, in a normal kind of spread out, go fast kind of prolific offense that we're seeing in this era, it's important that you get it right. But it's not like, I mean, let's be honest, this game is all about offense right now. It just is. And that's something Tennessee had to address in this hire. And that's something that Tennessee has addressed. Now, you know, recruiting at this level for this staff, we'll see. What kind of defensive staff will we put together? We'll see. But, you know, it's hard to be competitive at all right now if you can't play offense. I think that's one thing Danny White was smart about in making this hire.
Wes, what about the reaction of Tennessee fans? Do you just take it as really almost nothing would have made them happy? Or do you just see this as unrealistic expectations?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of... I mean, it's hard to paint with that broad of a brush, you know, because a fan base as large and as passionate as Tennessee's, you're never going to get a tremendous amount of agreement on a lot of things. Now, once you start hearing people like James Franklin were interested in this job, and he was very interested in this job, they had some pretty in-depth talks there. You know, that kind of stuff starts getting out, and then your level of excitement for the hire starts to go up. And then you end up with someone like Josh Heupel, who had just been working for your new AD just a couple weeks ago, and you start going, oh, that's a lazy hire. Is this the best they could do? They're so cheap. And the reality is, I don't know that Tennessee could have made a hire that was just, like, significantly better than this. Now, was Heupel anywhere near the top of my list? No, he wasn't. I'm not going to lie about that. But I'm also not going to sit here and say that I don't see why this hire was made. Because, you know, you were going to have to pay Franklin probably about $8 million a year. And that's, you know, then you got staff and you got some potentially some buyout stuff with the previous staff. You lost $40 million in revenue this year. I mean, I get why. But on top of that, you got to convince a coach to leave a great situation to come to a Tennessee team that just went 3-7, albeit in an SEC-only schedule. 4 or 5 of your best players just went to the portal. And you might be facing NCAA sanctions. So, you know, I got to be honest, guys, you're probably not going to the Ritz, you know? I mean, that's just not how it's going to be. So with that said, I don't think it's a terrible hire. I mean, time will tell on that, but, I mean, I see why they did it.
Speaking of Wes Rucker, of course, senior writer at Go Vols 24/7. Wes, what do you make of the hand-wringing by some alums, some former players, over T. Martin maybe not being part of this process?
You know, I got to be honest. I've also spoken with a lot of players because I'll be honest, I'm white. I'm not going to, you know, hide that. You know, look at pictures of me on the internet. So I try to be sensitive to these issues, and I try to call around. I try to get a lot of input from a lot of people, and I've done that, you know, for the past, what, I guess 24 hours or how long this has been out. And I got to tell you, I've heard a lot more people frustrated that this is a story rather than people that are frustrated about T. Martin not actually getting a shake. I think, you know, T. Martin's had chances. You know, South Alabama didn't hire him recently to be their head coach. And I like T. Martin. You know, I have no issues at all with T. Martin. He was a great player at Tennessee. He's had a nice career as an assistant. But that doesn't mean that he wasn't ready to be, that he's ready to be a head coach. I mean, at a place like Tennessee right now, when you were a part of the staff that potentially has some NCAA issues that have serious ones, I mean, that's not to say that he can't be a great head coach. He's a young guy. He can still have a huge career in this business. It's hard for me to see if Tennessee tried like hell to hire James Franklin, and Tennessee pursued guys like Tony Elliott and talked to them too. I don't know that I sense that as being a thing that Tennessee did wrong. And I'll be honest, if someone comes to me with evidence that says otherwise, I'm all ears. I just frankly don't see it.
Wes Rucker with us. Go Vols 24/7. The SEC released the schedule yesterday, and I know we had an idea of kind of what it was going to look like. A game against Pittsburgh in Neyland Stadium, which I'll call the Johnny Majors Bowl in that one. But what do you make of this, Lane Kiffin's return to Neyland Stadium? What do you make of the schedule for Josh Heupel's first year?
Well, the first thing I saw is that, you know, Tennessee plays eight consecutive weeks, and that eighth week is Alabama. So I'm not thinking that's going to be a great day for the Vols. I'm just going to throw that out there. I'm not thinking that's going to be a fun experience for them. But, yeah, I mean, it's a challenging schedule. I think it's good that Tennessee's had some just brutal non-conference schedules, and I like that because Tennessee does not scare. Tennessee will skip, you know, it'll – even when other SEC teams weren't being forced, you know, to do this, Tennessee was doing this. Tennessee was going out and playing people. I think this is a good year to have a manageable non-conference schedule. You know, I think it's important for that new staff. They got to go out there, and they can't have a Georgia State. You know, they got to go out there, and they got to win those games. But if they can do that, that sets them up to, you know, you don't have to move heaven and earth maybe to get to six wins, seven wins, and have a decent season. Because, you know, they're rebuilding a lot of this. I mean, I'm not saying that Heupel's walking into a bare cupboard, but, you know, losing four or five guys that they've lost in the portal, that's tough when you combine. I mean, you just look at the depth chart from the end of last season, and that wasn't a great team. It should have been better, but it wasn't, you know, that good of a team anyway. And you're taking a bunch of guys off of that, some of your best players. That's going to be a tough situation. So I think it's a tough schedule, and I think it's fun that Lane Kiffin's coming to Knoxville. I think that's going to be a tremendous amount of fun. I think you're going to have both teams trying to score like 50-plus points in that game, which always makes for good entertainment. But I think it once you see that schedule lay out on paper, you kind of see just, you know, how tough a season this is going to be for Tennessee. Even though the non-conference schedule isn't that bad, I mean, you know, Tennessee's got some rebuilding to do. Let's be honest about it.
Do you think Kevin Steele has any place in this regime?
At this point, I'm leaning toward probably no, and that's just based off what I'm hearing. You know, there's.
Well, what a great deal for him, huh?
Yeah, $500,000 basically for 2 weeks of not doing much of anything. That's awesome. Sign me up for that. Being fired, you know, without cause. From an SEC institution, it's got to be one of the greatest jobs that's ever existed. Like it's awesome. Like you're basically like the vice president. You do nothing and you make pretty good money to do it. So I think that would be, you know, that'd be sign me up for that. But yeah, I mean, I think Heupel, and I think it's important that he's got to blend guys who know this league. But at the end of the day, he's got to go with guys he knows and trusts, because I've seen this a lot in the business when you know, like, for instance, when Tennessee brought Bob Shoop over and, you know, basically didn't let him bring any of his own guys, so you just had the exact same defensive coaching staff with a brand-new defensive coordinator working with him, and he hadn't worked with those guys. It didn't work out great. You need guys who you've had experience with or guys who have worked with guys you've worked with, guys that will vouch for them, because you got to speak the same language. Football's hard. You got, you know, it's kind of like steering an aircraft carrier. You know, you got 105 guys in there. You got, 10 coaches or so, an army of, you know, assistants and grad assistants and quality control people. If you don't know the people that you're going to battle with every day, it's tough. You got to speak the same language, you know, the verbiage, it's got to come off the same. The attitudes have got to be the same, because if you – that can start sinking a ship really quick, because Tennessee – these Alabamas and Floridas and Georgias, they're not going to stop and let Tennessee catch up. Tennessee has to hit a moving target. Tennessee's got to be on the same page and moving forward, because they're not going to have the rosters those guys have right now. So they're going to have to win the other 364 days of the year. And to do that, you got to be on the same page. So it's like, know what you're doing, know who you're working with. And I think that's why Heupel's got to go with guys he trusts. And, you know, if you're going to hire Danny White to be the athletic director, you let him run the department. If Danny White's going to hire Josh Heupel, he needs to let him run the football program. Hire people, let them do their jobs, and I think that gives you a better chance in the long run to have success. I don't know that they're going to have success. I know they got a lot of challenges, but I think if you're going to pay a guy $4 million a year, you might as well let him pick the guys he works with.
Wes, if you're going to rank the four new head coaches that were hired this year in the SEC, Shane Beamer, Brian Harsin, Clark Lee, and, of course, Josh Heupel, how would you put them in an order?
That is a really good question. And I got to – let's see, have I slept enough in the past month to come up with a good answer there? I'll say this. I really like that Lee hire at Vanderbilt. I think that was – when you talk about kind of a cultural fit to a place and a guy who had the job he had, I mean, I think that's, you know, because Vandy could have gone with like Leopold or some other guys, but and they would have been fine hires, guys who also would have kind of fit that mold. But I think in terms of a fit, that's maybe the most seamless fit. You know, I always have a hard time figuring out Auburn because Auburn – it's kind of a joke, but Auburn's always good when they're supposed to be bad and always bad when they're supposed to be good. And that hire came out of left field, but that's a very Auburn thing to do. So that could be interesting, you know. Beamer, very much an unknown at South Carolina. I might put that one at the bottom of the list just because, I mean, I like Shane Beamer. I just, you know, there's no – he's never been a head coach. So you really never been a coordinator. So you don't really know exactly – what you're getting there. So that's a lot of uncertainty. I mean, I don't know. I think probably maybe the Auburn hire was the best one. I don't know. It's tough to say, but I don't think Heupel's a bad hire, and I don't think Clark Lee's a bad hire.
There you go. I think I might have stumped him.
No, you did. That's like when you ask the politician a question they don't know in a debate, and they just talk for a couple minutes trying to figure it out. That's what happened there. I'll be honest.
Hey,
that's a really good question.
Hey, it's a fun question. It's a totally fun question. Hey, Wes, appreciate
it is
the
because
time.
Because all of them could work, and all of them could also fail spectacularly.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, if you're not hiring Saban or Meyer or, you know, Swinney or one of those guys, you know, or Mullen, you don't know what you're getting.
Especially in a COVID time where you don't have recruiting like normal. And I just think that adds a lot to it as well. Hey, appreciate the time, and we'll do it again down the road.
Anytime.
Wes Rucker, Go Vols 24/7, getting us the latest on Rocky Top. Well, Mark, I asked him that question. I'll ask you the same question on the other side of how you would rank the hires in the SEC now that Josh Heupel has been named the head coach at Tennessee. We'll do that on the other side. Stillman and Company, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Thank you, David. Welcome back in. Stillman and Company, ESPN, 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Mark Howard in for Jared Stillman today. He hopes to be back in the saddle again tomorrow. So, Mark, I asked Wes that question. If you look at the hires in the SEC, and I do think it's a difficult question because he put it best. They could all be good. They could all fail, half, whatever. But how would you rank them with the four jobs?
Well, it is a good question. I'll say Brian Harsin, number one. You know, he's walking into a situation where he's got a pretty good team. So I think that that will be looked upon as the best hire. I'm going to say Shane Beamer too. I just think, and you know, it's interesting because a lot of people felt like it was a huge failure of Will Muschamp, you know, not winning at South Carolina. But I have a feeling that that Beamer might give them something that at least gets him to a bowl game. I'm going to put Heupel third and Clark Lee a close fourth, only because I don't think you're going to see it with wins and losses. I think what he's going to do is going to take some time. And frankly, I think he's going to get that time. But it's interesting to me that they're giving him a lot of resources, Clark Lee. But, yeah, he's going to need better facilities. They got to do a lot of things at Vanderbilt to make their coach look good.
Yeah, I think he's probably the most intriguing hire, if you're answering the question that way, just based on where he was and what he's going into and, like you just said, the resources that he's getting. But if I'm doing the ranking, we're on the same page on Harsin. He's worked his way up, 69-19 in 7 seasons at Boise. Yes, Boise State, the SEC are two very different things, but he's also inheriting the best team. I know people want to hate on Gus Malzahn, but you know Gus Malzahn didn't win championships. He came close, but he had good teams and he won. So I think Harsin walks in to a good situation. I'll go Heupel too, and I put that under the he's the right guy for right now. It is going to take some time. You're going to have to give him some time, but that offense, you know, he's got some players that he can work with. If he can turn some guys around to stay, that's only going to help. But that offense is going to be fun to watch. I'll go Clark Lee 3. Like you just said, we both just said, with the new facilities, which will take some time, that's going to help things. But he also understands Vanderbilt, and I think that's very important. And Candace Story Lee has talked about that, that you don't necessarily – you don't have to be an alum to succeed here, but it certainly does help that he's gone through it before and knows what they have.
Yeah, but meanwhile, Kansas Story Lee might be presiding over football and basketball programs that don't win a game in the SEC. Yeah. So she's got some decisions to make. You know, that seat, I don't want to say it's going to get hotter, but she might have to show her AD chops and make some tough decisions.
Yeah, and I mean, she's certainly going to have those ahead of her. I mean, Clark Lee's going to get the time. I think that this is – when he took that job, you got to look at it as – and I know that this doesn't happen much anymore, but it's really got to be a 4-year process at least for them to do the things that they need to do to turn that program around. And Derek Mason had time too. That has to happen. But on the basketball side of things, yeah, you're right. She is going to have to make some decisions. So I have Shane Beamer 4th, and it's not that I think he's a bad hire. I just that what they have to rebuild there, I think is going to take a while. He kept hiring staff members that then turned around and left and went to Auburn. So I don't know if he has it all together yet, and that's not all his fault. And
Tracy Rocker has his third job this offseason.
Yeah,
goes from South Carolina to Auburn to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, that shows you kind of what Shane Beamer has been up against. So it's not all on his fault, and the program just wasn't in a very good place anyway under Will Muschamp. So I think it's a fun question because, again, it's one of those things that we do here on Sports Talk Radio, you know, early on before any of the games have been played. I mean, we don't even know what the teams are going to look like. We don't know what the staffs are going to look like. I know Clark Lee has really been working on putting his together, but certainly going to be interesting that both SEC teams in our state now have new head coaches that have a lot of people going, okay. I want to see how it plays out. One's an offensive mind and one's a defensive mind. So I think that's certainly a fun storyline.
No, I agree with you. And you know what? You could almost do this randomly and be right. None of us are sure. There doesn't seem to be, really any predetermined pecking order here. Although Harsin is at least inheriting the best team. But you're right. It could go anyway.
I know one thing, though, for me, that still very young in my sports talk career, you know, less than 10 years, I haven't had time to talk about, you know, a successful run at Vanderbilt or at Tennessee. It would be nice to, you know, actually see some success. you know, Butch Jones had a 9-win season that was like, okay, cool. But it would be nice to have that. I feel like I'm always talking about, well, Vandy lost to this team or Tennessee got beat by this team. So that would be fun to have at some point in time.
Youth is wasted on the young. If you hang around long enough, pal, you'll see it.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully I do hang around long enough. We'll talk more about the Vols job and Josh Heupel getting hired. I thought there was some good stuff from Wes Rucker there. We'll do that to wrap up the show on this Thursday. Stillman and Company, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We're going to play with tempo here. We're going to be the aggressor. We're going to play with our skilled players out in space. We're going to give them an opportunity to push the football down the field. At the same time, if you really watch what we do, we're extremely balanced in our approach as far as running pass. We want to be physical. We want to dominate the line of scrimmage. Those are all things that are going to translate to what we're doing here in Knoxville.
Josh Heupel, New Vols head coach, yesterday in his opening press conference on what they plan to do on offense. Welcome back into Stillman and Company, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe and Mark Howard in for Jared Stillman today. Now, I know, obviously, got to see what recruits come in with signing day, even though a lot of that is pretty much done. Transfers still could be in play as well, and then what he has on the current roster. But we know that this is going to, as he just said, it's going to be an aggressive offense. It's going to be up-tempo, and I think that that's something that Vols fans are really looking forward to. But my question is, how's he going to handle the quarterback situation? And they got Caden Salter that is coming in as a freshman. We saw Harrison Bailey at times last year. How do you think he's going to go about the most important position, the position that he played on this team?
He's got Hendon Hooker is transferring in from Virginia Tech. Well, I'll tell you one thing. He'll manage his quarterbacks a hell of a lot better than the guy that he replaced. That's why he got hired. And he's got a history of this, of developing quarterbacks. And remember, you know, he lost his first two quarterbacks at UCF and still kept winning. So his ability to coach up quarterbacks, you know, for that offense, to me, is a good sign. And even though it's against SEC competition, and I know all that, I think a lot of his naysayers will feel better about him. Now, I don't know what his bottom line is going to be, but you know, I'm like Wes Rucker. You know, the more I've had time to think about this, I feel a little bit better about it than I did yesterday. Rex Road hates it. But I think, first of all, this was about as good as Tennessee was going to do. So they might as well make the best of it. And he's going to get some time. You know, his guy, his AD hired him. And we all know that when you're working for the guy who hired you, you're going to get a longer leash. And as long as, Danny White stays at Tennessee, Josh Heupel is going to feel a little bit more secure.
This is what Barrett Salee wrote about the hire on CBSSports.com. Heupel is the perfect hire at the perfect time for Tennessee. New AD Danny White committed to building a program that is sustainable over time, and Heupel's offensive prowess and familiarity with White mean that he will make Tennessee what it needs to be, a long-term offensive force, and he gives it a grade of an A-. I'm kind of with you that, as I kind of sit here and, I respect other people's opinions, so listen to that and read, but then think about it more. And I thought it was interesting that Wes went back and watched the press conference. I'm with you. It's like I said earlier, it's the right hire at the right time for right now. And now you just got to let him do the job. Get out of his way, give him time, give him space, and let him do the job. I want to see this offense with these quarterbacks and these skill position players. I mean, is the roster where it needs to be? No, but it's not like there've been worse rosters on other teams. I mean, there's still some talent there. It's just, how do you use it? And then the big question will be, if the offense puts up a ton of points, is the defense going to be strong enough to stop the other team where, they're not getting scored all over? I mean, how many points are they going to give up? That's going to be the biggest question that Heupel's going to have to figure out with his defensive coordinator.
Well, the best news, I think, Chase, is the transfer portal gives you a little more flexibility. It giveth, but it all, it taketh, but it also giveth. And Tennessee might be losing guys. I was joking yesterday that the transfer portal out of Knoxville is gridlocked. But I think some of those offensive players might rethink. I know Eric Gray's going to Oklahoma and all that, and guys have already committed. But I also think that there's going to be some opportunities. And I think when the transfer portal concept came out, I think we all said that it wasn't so much that the rich were going to get richer, Players want to play. Players want opportunity. And at Tennessee, opportunity will be plentiful. So that could be. And the other good thing is the offense that they're running will be very attractive to skill players, be it running backs, be it receivers. So in that regard, at Tennessee, it could end up being a plus.
Yeah, because if you go around and you watch high school football, all the offenses are that way. I mean, it's, you know, yes, there is some element of old school ground and pound, but these players today, they love the up-tempo stuff and the gadget plays and all of that, and I think you're going to get a mix of everything with Heupel's offense. People now, you know, go back and watch, you know, some of Drew Locke even at Missouri when he was there, and watch UCF over the last few years. That's going to be fun. That's going to, you know, have a butts in seat factor when things are normal and you can actually go to a game. So I think that is a plus, and that's going to help recruiting because a prospective kid, and he talked about closing the borders, keeping kids in this state, going after some of the talent that's in the state of Tennessee. Well, they watch that offense, they're going to go, that's something that I think that I can be a part of and is going to really show my skill set. Whether they have aspirations of playing on Sundays or not, that's going to be attractive, and I think that's why this hire makes so much sense.
I agree with you. An offense like that sells players pretty quickly. And if Tennessee gets off to a decent start, just even a decent start, I think recruits will look at them and be intrigued. And hopefully that will lead to good recruiting classes for the Vols.
Yeah, and you and I haven't really talked about the schedule today because all that happened yesterday. And I know Josh Heupel had nothing to do with what this schedule is going to look like, but the non-conference schedule for them is certainly manageable. Starting the year off with games that are three straight at home with Bowling Green, Pittsburgh, and Tennessee Tech. I mean, that's where you can show off some things, get out to a good start, and then, of course, you really get the meat of it, of going at Florida, at Missouri, South Carolina, Ole Miss, and Lane Kiffin's return, and then at Alabama on October 23rd before you have the bye, and then closing out, of course, at Kentucky versus Georgia, South Alabama, and then Vanderbilt. It's not an easy schedule, but it's manageable.
Yeah, it made me sad to see them bringing Pittsburgh in here, and unfortunately Johnny Majors not being around to enjoy that. But I'm sure, I think you mentioned it, he will definitely be thought of, but yeah, you're right. They're out of conference. Looks like it's got three or four wins for them, and then comes the tough part, the SEC.
Yeah, and it's way too early to even have this conversation, but it's what we do. I mean, what is a successful first season for him? I mean, is it simply just getting to a bowl game?
Yeah, I think if he gets to six, it'll be considered a success.
He might get
given everything that happened to this roster.
Yeah, and I think you got to have some signature wins in there. You know, beating Kiffin in his return because Ole Miss, you know, hopes to be better. You do that. I mean, you got to be realistic when it comes to a Florida or Alabama or a Georgia, but you got to take care of business elsewhere. I mean, Missouri, South Carolina. I mean, Missouri's not going to be easy. South Carolina, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, of course. So like I said, I use that word manageable. I agree. Six wins, go to a bowl. Oh, you're feeling great. Seven wins, throwing, you know, a massive party if he's able to pull that off. But again, it all depends on the pieces that he's going to have, the horses to run the offense, who's running the defense, what he has on that side of the ball, and can he start the foundation this year when they kick it off on September 4th and build from there? It's certainly a long process. The staff, you know, there are rumors out there of maybe some staff members that he could be bringing from Central Florida to join, but it's a long process and it's just beginning.
No doubt. And you would expect him to bring some assistance from Central Florida. because, you know, they know the system. I mean, they're familiar with what the coach, you know, wants and wants to teach and all that. So that certainly doesn't surprise me. But I think you're going to see, you know, some guys with SEC backgrounds. Willie Martinez's name was brought up as possibly the defensive coordinator. He's been at Tennessee before. He's been around the SEC, was the DC for a long time at Georgia. So guys like that, I think we're going to hear them mentioned as Heupel puts his staff together.
Absolutely. Mark, it's been a lot of fun this week. I know Jared is supposed to be back tomorrow. I will be on with Darren and Willie for Darren, Donick, and Chase. Bill Polian coming up at 12:30 tomorrow. All right. So looking forward to that. But it's been fun, and I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Talking with TD coming up next at Stillman & Company, ESPN 102.5 The Game.